Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless
you. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye's look at this week in the Capitol. But first, Wiss, I was there with all the discussion of the mental health state of the shooter in Parkland, Florida. Listen to retiring Milwaukee Police Chief Ed Flynn talk about mental health issues on the streets of Milwaukee. Point two, the leader of the Milwaukee Urban League talks about how the group helped African Americans resettle in Milwaukee during the Great Migration. Point three, the former chairman of the Menominee Tribe talks about their environmental concerns. Wish I was there.
The mental health system in this county and in most of the countries is a disaster. There's a lot of talk about the opioid crisis. There's a lot of talk about the homeless crisis. There's a lot of talk about the mental health crisis. Yeah, there's 911. When you're in my world, you would think listening to politicians, there's no social problem so complicated that the cure isn't, wait for it, more training for the police. So instead of having a robust mental health system, all my cops have crisis intervention training. That's our social response right now. We have a really, 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 really stupid concealed carry bill in this state. Yes, it's in the Bible. You can carry a gun, I think. But I don't see in the Bible where it says, you know, repeat violent sinners get to carry a gun. And I didn't see that in the Constitution either. But in Wisconsin, that's okay. Every year since that law has passed, the number of non-fatal shootings has increased. The percentage of homicides committed with a gun has increased. The number of firearms seized from criminals on our streets has increased. And the time to crime, meaning the time between when a gun was purchased and somebody used it in a crime, has decreased to be one of the shortest in the country.
If we don't provide coverage for people, you know what the consequence is? People go to the emergency room in uncompensated care. And in Wisconsin, in 2013, before the ACA was passed, it was nearly $1.6 billion in uncompensated health care. In 2016, it dropped to just above $900 million. So that's an impact. And you know, that money doesn't go away. That uncompensated care shows up in some of the expenses we're talking about here for health insurance because it gets passed on to other people.
So the total funding that has gone out from grants from WEDC since its inception is about $2 billion. 18% of those dollars have gone to these rural counties. 18% of those dollars. Yet, the cost per job in the rural counties is right around half of what it is in those larger counties. So you can get a lot more bang for your buck in these rural counties than you can in some of our more populated areas.
So the Urban League itself was started in 1910. 1 year after the founding of the NAACP, it was founded as one of the resource organizations created to embrace the 5 to 8 million African American individuals and families who were leaving the South, going to the North for a better quality of life. The better quality of life did not eliminate racism. Racism was still there. But the ability to survive a little bit longer up North was a true reality. So as we moved into those cities, the Urban League was the place for individuals to learn about the jobs. Where were the jobs?
Nathaniel Markinuk, Poso, the Manini Tananit Naonakuk, was Paris in the Aswisian, but Gary Bisa is the name I use when I pay my taxes.
The Menominee have several environmental struggles. We'll start with that. One being the proposed Aquila open pit sulfide mine on the Menominee River, which is the interstate boundary between Upper Michigan and Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. So we are concerned about that, as well as the mining moratorium repeal And we also have some concerns with some of the proposed wolf hunting and some of the other wetlands reduction in state oversight. So those are some of the bigger environmental pieces.
Tuesday's a primary only for one seat on the Supreme Court, a 10-year term. Now, you at WIS Politics, you guys watch numbers so well. So what you have reported this week is that Sauk County Circuit Court judge in the window January through February 5 raised $231,000, and we'll talk about where much of that came from. Madison attorney Timothy Burns, $79,000, and Milwaukee County Judge Rebecca Dallet, $91,000. Now, that's just the window of January through February 5, but as you noted in your newsletter, $110,000 of that was in-kind donations, ads, staff, et cetera, from the Republican Party. And you also put a footnote that number, when you look, there's an additional number that takes a number from the Republican Party for Judge Skronik to what, $140,000?
Yes. So you have the pre-election or pre-primary reporting period, but in Wisconsin law, if you get a contribution of $1,000 or more in the 15 days after reporting period closes, ahead of an election, you have to report that contribution. He got $31,000 from the state GOP, which pushes their overall investment to $142,000.
Yep, $142,000.
To put that in perspective, in 2016, the state GOP spent just less than $70,000 to help Rebecca Bradley retain her seat in the Supreme Court. Now, we have totally different races, but let's look at like what's happening. In addition to state GOP, we have WMC's Issues Mobilization Council spending money on satellite, cable, and broadcast TV. Wisconsin Lines for Reform doing TV and radio, I believe. The investment between those two groups plus the state GOP, by my numbers, is up to $800,000.
$800,000
just
in
for
a primary, from third-party groups to help Judge Skronik, right?
Yeah, and this is a nonpartisan primary, and we've seen this playbook before. We have a conservative candidate and one moderate, one liberal. The conservative almost always gets through easily. It's more a question of if he or she'll get to 50% than getting through. There's a real fear of the environment right now from conservatives about what this race can look like on Tuesday. So I get the impression most folks still think that Skronik will get through, but there's like this palpable kind of like hesitation of it is the Wild West out there right now because they're spooked, Republicans are, about what happened in the special election a month ago in SD10. They're seeing more legislative seats flip across the country that have been Republican-leaning. So there's like this, what's going on? Now, on top of that, I mentioned Bradley's race in 2016. Remember, in the run-up to the election, she'd been hit with stories about old columns she wrote while at Marquette that were deemed anti-gay. She was fighting through that. They still spent less than $70,000, the GOP did. But she was an incumbent justice, an appointed one, but still an incumbent.
She'd only been on the bench a few months.
She had been an appeals court judge in Milwaukee, a circuit court judge in Milwaukee. So she had the power of incumbency plus being from Milwaukee, the state's largest media market, to her benefit. Michael Skronik is a Sauk County judge. He was appointed by Walker. He's not known in any of the population centers. He doesn't have these advantages that Bradley had, even with the baggage she brought to that race. That's why you're seeing the spending ahead of a primary. They're trying to make sure he gets through, because if he doesn't make through it on Tuesday, it's over. You have then Rebecca Dallet, who's kind of left of center judge.
Yes.
And Tim Burns runs an unabashed progressive attorney. So they know they have to get him through on Tuesday. They have a shot to hold on to the seat.
Well, are there any third party groups helping Dallet and Burns? But they're not running as checks as big as they're for Judge Skronik.
I mean, like, there are several groups who've endorsed, you know, like Burns has been endorsed by a couple of groups who, you know, they're encouraging members to turn out. I'm not seeing infinite expenditures on their behalf.
Okay.
Dallet's up on TV, Burns has gone up on TV, but we've not seen anything to match what's happened to the conservative side with Skronik right now.
Okay, and the projections are 8% voter turnout. So you have these huge amounts of money for an 8% voter turnout, and if these special interest groups are now spending on behalf of Skronik, how much? More than $800,000?
Yeah, I've got $800,000 between those three groups right now.
What's likely if he wins Tuesday's primary in terms of additional third-party spending?
Excellent question. Excellent question. Because here's this dynamic long term. Shirley Abramson is up next year. Now, she's in her 80s. I'm not sure what decision she's made about running again. But if you're a progressive, you need to win this seat, hold Shirley's next year, whether she runs or not, and then you would have an opportunity in 2020 with Daniel Kelly to win back majority of the Supreme Court.
Right.
But the key is winning this race on April. For conservatives, that means that this is kind of like a firewall. hold on to this seat. If Kelly, if you know, you can pick off Abramson's seat, great. But then you have like a cushion majority in the court. So there's some real high stakes in this.
Yeah, and we're going to have a lot to talk about on a Tuesday's election and next week's Rewind. Okay, let's go to a different subject. The Assembly was in session, I don't know, 18, 19 hours this week. They're beginning to stack up at the door of the Senate some major issues. Let's listen to just about a minute of the debate on welfare reform, a 10-bill package that the Assembly GOP pushed through and gave to the Senate. So let's listen to the exchange on welfare reform.
Perhaps some of you will bolt from your leadership, who says you have to vote lockstep against welfare reform. They will realize that it's good for your communities. They will realize that what we see right here is that Wisconsin has always been a bold leader in welfare reforms. These reforms are going to pay off for Wisconsin. They are going to pay off for our citizens, and they are going to pay off for the taxpayers. Every Wisconsinite wants to have a fair chance at a good-paying job, and that's exactly what these bills before us today will do.
If, Mr. Speaker, Republicans were serious about helping working families, we would be expanding education and job training opportunities, and we would be raising wages for every working family in this state. And time and again, Republicans have claimed that we can't afford to invest more in child care, that we can't afford to expand transportation. Now you've proposed instead throwing more than $100 million in the first year alone to fund what is truly a rushed through the legislature, last minute election year gimmick.
The welfare reform package is a priority of Governor Walker. There's no doubt in your mind the Senate's going to take it whenever, next week or next Tuesday or whenever.
When I talked to Scott Fitzgerald middle of this week, he said that his caucus seemed to be okay with that package and that they were going to get through it, it seemed like.
Okay. I think the compromise version allowing up to 1 acre in urban areas of wetlands to be filled, that was debated for hours. You got into the whole issue of water. Shanklin talked about that extensively. That's also a bill that the Senate's going to act on.
Fitzgerald said it'll be on the calendar next week.
Okay. The sparsity aid for school districts and for low-spending school districts.
That 91 was to 2 or something?
91
like
to 2, right. Jarko and I forget the other vote against. That's also something the Senate's going to pass.
I believe so. So the things that I'm watching are the $100 per child credit.
Yes.
Fitzgerald told us there's an issue with his caucus about the sales tax holiday. There are people who don't like it. There's a price tag, $50 million or so. There are people who think it's gimmicky. So there's some last minute trying to figure out what the path forward is on that. Beyond that, you know, we'll see the prisons bill. You know, Fitzgerald says a heavy lift.
Yeah, we're going to get into that next. The foster care changes that the Assembly also laid at the door of the Senate.
Okay with that.
Okay.
The reinsurance package at one point was the heavy lift, it seemed like.
Yeah.
That passed joint finance 13-3 with Shanklin, a Democrat voting for it, gave it kind of a bipartisan sheen. Fitzgerald, it seemed like that was going to be okay, but until push comes to shove, you know, I don't know for sure. There's this issue with Republicans of they're not real thrilled with the idea because to some it's propping up Obamacare. I mean, this is the individual market through the Affordable Care Act where there are 216,000 Wisconsinites purchasing this care. Some subsidize it, some not. But they don't like the idea of helping out anything with Obamacare. They want it to go away. But the argument's now becoming from backers of, this isn't propping it up. This is working the parameters of what we have to try and provide relief to people who are being hit by these large increases in the premiums. Fitzgerald seemed to think that was going to be okay. Dave Craig said, I guess, has some issues with it still, but thought it was okay. But with that whole caucus, it's like, until you get like them in a room and say, all right, do we have 17 votes? Nothing is assured.
Right.
So that's the one thing I hesitate about making predictions with the Senate because we haven't had an ironclad, yes, we have 17 votes on A, B, and C right now.
Okay, now let's turn to the package drafted by Assembly leaders, both D's and R's, with the help of Senate Democrats that would close the juvenile prisons by 2020. Now, just let's listen to about a minute of that press conference, Speaker Voss, Corrections Chair Michael Schrah, and Milwaukee Representative David Bowen.
The basic idea is to say that we need to have a facility that continues to take care of the worst among juvenile offenders, but our goal has always been the same, to make sure that any juvenile who commits an offense, be it minor or major, has the chance to rehabilitate themselves, hopefully become a productive member of society, and do it in a way that also protects the public.
Just a quick overview of the timeline. September of this year, the study committee will report to the Department of Children and Families. By December of this year, Department of Children and Families will promulgate rules. March of 2019, we'll look at the preliminary grant applications from counties. July 2019, the grant committee will submit their plan to the Joint Finance Committee. And then July of 2020, Lincoln Hills will be closed and all the youth transferred.
I also want to make sure that we recognize the advocates all over the state. Especially in our town, our part of the state, in Milwaukee, Youth Justice Milwaukee, being very active on this issue and demanding a new direction for the betterment of our young people, for the betterment of the future of our state. It reminds me of Marcus Williams, who was once incarcerated at Lincoln Hills, now a college student in our UW system. He represents the future of us creating more of that great outcome of young people being on the wrong track, but getting them back on the right track. And we will be able to do that through this bill.
That Voss-Schwab press conference was attended by some Milwaukee Democrats, mm-hmm. Mr. Goyke, as we just heard, Mr. Bowen. So you have this very unique compromise on a plan that would close the juvenile prisons by 2020, would transfer most of the inmates, those that were least dangerous, to county facilities. What's your understanding? Will the counties have to build new facilities or expand their existing jails?
I'm not quite sure about that. There would be a new facility for the most serious offenders.
Yes.
The issue it seems like that Scott Fitzgerald has is that, one, don't forget his dad was a sheriff. He wants input from the sheriffs, the counties, state agencies, all people being impacted by this. This thing has been moving very quickly for what it would do. Remember, Scott Walker originally said, here's my plan to close Lincoln Hills. Let's do it next year.
In the 2019-21 budget.
Borrow $80 million, build these five regional facilities, expand Mendota to treat those mental health issues. That was his plan. These guys have taken that now and revamped it to this Tuesday. This week, they're going to pass it next week, I believe. So it's moving very quickly. And Fitzgerald's calling it a heavy lift. He told us he wants to maybe do the framework mm-hmm. of this, but come back next year and finish it off. Now, what's that mean exactly? He didn't really tell us. But there is obviously a hesitancy on his part to embrace the whole package right now yeah. with what's, the time that's closed, the dwindling window to do this stuff.
And the governor told the press corps, I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday, look, this is on my must-do list
imperative,
for this session.
Imperative, he said.
That was the word, imperative. Mm-hmm. Okay. So do you think the Senate will go along with at least passing the skeleton and we'll put flesh on the bones later?
Good question. I mean, the governor's strong point has not been arm twisting with the legislature in his time in office. For somebody who's been in the assembly for a long time, he's not somebody who's known as personally pressing people. Tommy Thompson was a different model, bang on the desk and then put arm around, tell you what a friend you are. That's not Governor Walker. Wasn't Doyle either, to be honest. But I don't know if they can get this done, the whole thing, because there's this other kind of dynamic you got to worry about or pay attention to. The Assembly has said they are going to finish up next week, period. Robin Voss said they'll come in Tuesday, finish the Tuesday count on Wednesday if they have to, mm-hmm. Thursday. He said keep open Friday. He wants to be done as of Friday, next week. Now,
wow.
If that happens, any Senate bill that has not cleared the Assembly by Friday, a week from today, will not happen.
Right.
All right?
Yeah.
And any Assembly bill that's cleared as that day has to pass in that form the Senate, otherwise it won't happen.
Right.
So we are on a game of chicken in some ways with some of these bills
who's
going to do what.
Right.
And will Robin Voss really say, okay, we're done Friday, we're gone, we're not coming back no matter what.
Right. The governor went to the White House to talk about the federal government's infrastructure package, which we'll talk about later. In the course of that, the President Trump said, everybody wanted Foxconn. Frankly, they weren't going to come to this country. I hate to say it, President's words, if I didn't get elected, they wouldn't be in this country. Governor Walker, you did a great job. J.R., what strikes me is this lashes the governor to Trump on Foxconn. Mm-hmm. And you've heard the Democrats say, this is one of our big issues. You're giving away too much.
Yeah.
I had a Democrat come up and tell me in the 10th Senate District, support for Foxconn only polled 28%. So this was just intriguing because it lashes Mr. Yeah. Trump, Mr. Walker on the Foxconn deal.
Don't forget with the 10th Senate, though, that Adam Jarko voted against the Foxconn deal.
Yes.
Still lost. Foxconn's part of why you're seeing the Rural Economic Development Fund that's kind of moving through the legislature quickly as well.
$50 million that Tranel wants to restructure.
Governor Walker made this a priority because Republicans know they need rural voters. They've been doing well with them lately. They need them to come out this fall. And John Nygren, Coach of the Finance, said it during the hearing. The message last election is voters and rural voters are scared. They are scared of what their future is, if their kids can stay around there and get jobs, or what's going to happen. If you have $4.5 billion flowing to Foxconn for a plant in Racine County, and you don't have anything to help these guys, there's going to a fear that they're going to say, well, where's mine? Why? It makes Foxconn more of an issue to some people.
Yeah.
So this fund is kind of a, here you go. We are in tune to your issues. We know about your fears, and we're trying to help you kind of thing.
And this week I interviewed three tribal leaders. Do you expect any residual benefits from the Foxconn deal? And all three said no. Meanwhile, the State Department of Administration has set up a new Foxconn website, and you can see that at DOA's. So Foxconn is still a big dance for everybody in that capital.
I think Secretary Hogan said someone this week they expected 1,000 people hired by the end of 2018. So, you know, they've got sites picked out. We talked. There has to be progress this summer to help Governor Walker say, look, it's
ground.
Coming to fruition.
Okay, now let's talk the federal proposed, President Trump's infrastructure package. Now, as you said, and I wasn't listening very well, $1.5 trillion, but only $200 million federal skin in the game?
Billion. Yes, $200 billion.
Sorry, let's rephrase that. $1.5 trillion package, $200 billion.
Yes.
Did I get it right that time?
Yes.
Okay, that's the ante from the federal government. So it leaves states, local governments, and private sector investment scrambling. Now, the governor has said he hopes Congress will reverse the funding, so 80% of the $1.5 trillion comes from the feds, 20% match. We don't know if this package is going to go anywhere in Congress, do we?
No.
No.
We also don't know where the money would come from to pay for it
right.
if it did. I saw a story, and I read very closely, President Trump expressed interest in a 25 cents per gallon hike in the federal gas tax.
Which hasn't been raised in a long time.
I don't see conservative Republicans want to raise a gas tax by a quarter a gallon. Do you?
No.
So how are they going to pay for it? Paul Ryan, don't forget, is a major player in all this, a Speaker of the House.
Yes.
So Governor Walker, a few weeks ago, when he talked about opening the door to gas tax hike in Wisconsin, mentioned that key players, you know, knew about Wisconsin's needs. I'm sure Paul Ryan's one of those guys. I don't know if they can pass anything, period, in Congress right now. The place is so dysfunctional, right? I don't know if they can pass something like with this kind of a funding mix. And then there are questions like, okay, well, what local money would qualify?
Yes.
So, for example, if we borrowed more, would it count? If we transferred general purpose revenue from that fund to the transfer, would that count? What about states who have already raised their gas tax in the last year? They've raised new revenue. Does that count? Or does that have to be new as of, like, pick a date this bill takes effect, new money raised after that date?
And I'm going to make your head explode with one other scenario. The local wheel tax collections that local governments collect, that's taken a huge increase. I think it's up to $30 million a year. Could that be a match? Meanwhile, I went to a few Democratic candidate for governor's websites looking for positions on how we come up with a federal match. I haven't found them yet, but they're going to have to come up with those issues.
Oh, yeah. Several have said they would support a gas tax hike of 5 cents a gallon, 10 cents a gallon. What Fitzgerald said a week ago? That will not address the size of the projects we need to do. It's open road tolling. I'm not holding my breath for any answer anytime soon.
Yeah, I'm not either. Okay, there was some major personnel changes.
Mm-hmm.
Secretary of Administration Neitzel is now moving on, and you reported today he wrote his employees, I don't know what I'm going to do next, but he was a former vice president of Madison Gas and Electric when he joined DOA.
He's 57, did 3 years as secretary, almost 3 years exactly.
Yep.
A true public service kind of period. I mean, Scott, let's forget, he took a pay cut to take this job as DOA secretary. So he can go back to the private sector, you know, make good coin, I'm sure, last years of his career before he retires. Now we have Ellen Novak coming to replace
him. PSC chairman. She'll become DOA secretary, former chief counsel to former speaker John Gard.
Chief of staff, the then county executive Don Varakis of Waukesha County.
Right.
PSC commissioner since 2011. Will be the second woman to lead DOA since in its almost 60-year history. The first since 1987. Doris Hansen wrapped up her term then. She served under Tony Earle, Democrat Governor Tony Earle in the 80s.
Right. And Mr. Lon Roberts, who's a fairly new addition to the PSC, is the new chairman. He is a former law partner of Ruder Ware, I think, in Wausau before he joined the PSC.
Note about Novak. Somebody told me this week that DOA secretaries, you need to be able to know how to run an agency, which she did at PSC. You have to know what the business community needs in Wisconsin. That's part of your job. She got that from, you know, PSC deals with that, energy needs.
Yeah.
And you know politics. She's from the legislature. You know, she spent time working for Gard. So she checked several boxes that are helpful to this. And as both you and I know, even though the budget is only 5 months old, 6 months old, they're already starting to think about the next one.
Mm-hmm.
So this summer, while Governor Walker is campaigning for re-election, his administration, including Ellen Novak, will be thinking about what's the next budget going to look like to build the framework, because agency requests are due in September, right?
Yes. Yep, it is. Okay, let's go quickly about some space needs. The governor announced they're going to sell the Milwaukee office building in downtown Milwaukee, and he has put together, his administration wants to see offers in a broad part of Milwaukee, and we're showing that on the graphic right now, and then we're going to buy the Tommy G. Thompson Center building here in downtown Madison for $29 million. Any surprises there?
No, Tommy Thompson Center, by doing it, they would save a bunch of money because the 20 years of pay off the bonds would give you 20 more years of that building with basically no mortgage payment.
Yeah.
That just operation costs.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go to your stock picks. Rising.
So Michael Brennan, so the Milwaukee attorney cleared judiciary this week in the U.S. Senate for his appointment to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. We kind of knew this was where they were going. I mean, the writing was on the wall for a while. There's a tradition in the U.S. Senate called the blue slip. What that allows is that any senator can withhold their blue slip on a judicial nominee from their home state and say this person's not going to get appointed or get a hearing.
Put a hold on it.
Yes.
Stop it.
Charles Grassley, senator from Iowa, chair of judiciary, has basically said, I'm not going to pay attention to that tradition anymore. It's a century old when it comes to circuit court nominees, the appeals courts, essentially. 11-10, party line vote. Progressives complained that Brennan danced around the question of whether he believed there's racial bias in the judicial system. Conservatives really like him, think he is going to be an intellectual in the court. The question now becomes, when he goes to a full confirmation vote in the Senate, will you pick up any red state Democrats for that final vote? Otherwise, he looks like he's a sure bet to make the appeals court. Baldwin, don't bet on her supporting him. She did not return her blue slip for Brennan and complained loudly to Grassley that they were doing this despite that. Oh, and by the way, we have a federal nominating commission in Wisconsin, been in operation since 1979. That nominates candidates for the senators to recommend the White House.
Yep.
The White House bypassed that process to pick Brennan. So,
yep.
Good vote. Bet ball is going to be a no on that vote.
Okay. And mixed, you have this. Well, you tell it. This delicious thing with Mr. Nicholson's parents. Go
all
ahead.
All over the place. So we find out that Kevin Nicholson is only estranged from the Democratic Party, right? But he and his parents don't talk. It's an odd and also sad, by the way, twist to this story. Found out that. Nicholson's parents gave the max primary donation to Tammy Baldwin in December.
$2,700?
Months after their son announced his intention to run for U.S. Senate.
Yep.
We have Tonette Walker, who is now backing Leah Vukmir.
Senator Vukmir.
Which, not a surprise. I mean, Alex Walker is working for Vukmir. They're both Wauwatosa folks. You know, there are a lot of connections. Vukmir has this connection to the grassroots. And then we have Eric Hovde out there in the ether. Will he or won't he?
Now, you want to bet?
Not right now.
Okay.
I think the feeling is he will get in. But what's interesting is, if Hovde gets in, who does he hurt the most? So on the one hand, you have Nicholson trying to claim the outsider mantle, right? Well, Hovde is not from government. He's an outsider as well. Could he pull that mantle away? For Vukmir, they both struggle to raise money. I mean, they've $800,000 in the last quarter for Nicholson, $400,000 for Vukmir. Hovde can write his own check, right? So if you're Nicholson, you've got Dick Uihlein, who has spent already several million dollars to groups that have done ads on your behalf.
Seven figures.
We haven't seen anything for Vukmir that way. Would it then hurt Vukmir because you have a new financial pressure in that race? Then for Hovde, the question is, well, can you buy your way in? Because my impression is that Eric Hovde, people, you know, voters remember him from the 2012 primary a little bit, but he hasn't been going to, like, Lincoln Day dinners. When I go state convention, I don't see him doing a hospitality suite or hanging out for days at a time doing small talk with, you know, grassroots person A, B, C, D, and E.
From Burnett County, Iron County. Yeah.
So what's he done to keep the home fires burning since 2012 when he finished second to Tommy Thompson? There is a perception of wealthy candidates sometimes. They think they can buy their way out of a problem or an issue. So would Hovde have to buy his way through?
And you've got him out in the ether? Is that your term?
And, you know, Hovde, it looks like he's trying to figure out, is it worth spending the money? If it's a wave year, if he thinks a wave year is coming, he may not run because he might say, you can't beat Timmy Baldwin in a wave year, so why bother? So also for watching that Senate race right now.
Out in the ether. Falling.
The alcohols are, this thing.
The liquors are?
The bubbled
Senator
up.
Senator Fitzgerald's liquors are?
Bubbled up and fizzled in the course of like a several days. So what's interesting is this summer, if you recall, there was also talk about doing this new enforcement office, but it was paired with changes to the three-tiered system. To boil it down, they, Wisconsin, if you manufacture the alcohol, you can't distribute it. If you distribute, you can't be a retailer. I mean, that's kind of like an oversimplification, but that's what it is.
That's part of the three-tier system, isn't it?
Yep. That fizzled out this summer because it just people were unhappy. All of a sudden, Scott Fitzgerald has the new enforcement office in a bill paired with a carve-out to that three-tiered system for Kohler Company.
Which is?
Owns the American Club over in the Sheboygan area, a couple of golf courses.
Unique brandy?
Chocolate brandy. They distill chocolate brandy through a contract. They want to distill it on-site. Well, on-site, they have two bars, at least, something like that. A bar at the golf course, at least a bar at the club. Well, you would be a distiller, a manufacturer, and a...
You'd be violating the three-tier system.
So this bill comes up. There's a hearing on it Thursday. There was going to be a committee vote this morning. It was canceled right ahead.
And Speaker Voss says,
well,
don't think he has support in his caucus.
Dan Fine, the chair of that committee that was going to vote on it, said maybe we should do a commission and look at alcohol laws in general. The problem with three-tiered system is, or we make changes to it, is that whenever you create an exemption for somebody, somebody else gets angry.
Yeah.
And we have all these blurred lines right now. So if you're a brewery, you can have a tasting room. Okay, well, you are a you are a manufacturer, and then you're a retailer. Wineries want to have tasting rooms, right? They want to have longer hours. So all these little carve-outs that you do, it makes somebody unhappy. And the Tavern League is still very powerful in Wisconsin, and they're going, wait, you're giving these guys these exemptions that we don't have. That's not fair. So you get Miller Coors saying, don't do this. If you want to change the enforcement, do this instead. It is a difficult lift anytime you mess with this system. And there are people who want to blow it up, do away with the entire thing and say, just go at it.
Yes, and they've been at it for a long time. But bottom line, Liquor Czar is dead.
And a lot of lobbyists are going to make a lot of money if they go and try and do this again next session.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Next week, the Supreme Court race and what the Senate passes and doesn't pass. That's Rewind for February the 16th.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.